The Punt, William Hill's Top Flight Football Podcast.
Hello everyone, The Punt is back. Dave Kellner here in the studio with Lee Phelps. We've got rid of that international nonsense. We're back to the standard Premier League action. That's where we make cash each and every week. Fingers crossed.
Hang on a minute. I would agree with you, Norman, but Tuesday night, I couldn't even decide which match to watch. Scotland-Poland. Poland-Scotland was fantastic. Germany-Republic of Ireland. Great game. I was flicking between the two.
No.
And I'm not even mentioning, Northern Ireland beat Greece in Greece.
They did indeed.
Unbeaten home nations and Ireland over the... You're wrong this time.
They're only 5-1 to win that group now,
yeah.
Lee. Imagine that at the start of the International European Championship qualification campaign. It would have been unheard of.
I can't imagine it.
5-1 Northern Ireland to win that group. Anyway, that international stuff's out of the way. We're back to the Premier League this week. And our guest this week is the editor-in-chief at whoscored.com, Alistair Tweedale. Good morning, Alistair.
Good morning.
How are you, first of all, sir?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Very well indeed. Tell me a bit about the website, first of all, because I know that a lot of football punters and a lot of chaps that like in-depth previews of football matches in the Premier League always go to your website and visit it. Tell us a little bit about how the website works, first of all.
Well, we're a football stats website. We have our data provided to us by a football stats company called Opta. And we use those stats to make our own products, which we think are a good way of reflecting different players' abilities and performances throughout the leagues all over the world. So one of the things we do is rating system, where there are hundreds of different stats which are all bumped into the system, and each one will positively or negatively affect each player and team's rating for any given game, and we kind of think that's the best. It's a kind of a more objective way of judging players' performances than, say, just an analyst, Michael Owen or someone like that on the telly, just choosing a player at the end of each game.
Yeah, it's superb. It really is a superb website.
Like. It's interesting as well. We're not wishing to decry football pundits, but when you look at the stats, Alistair, on the website, whether you look at them just purely through Opta or you look at whoscored.com, the stats don't really match up to what a lot of pundits say on the TV, do they? I mean, it's interesting when you look at, a team like QPR, for instance, we'll come on to them during the podcast, who have so many shots on goal but so few goals. I mean, they're generally regarded as being a terrible team. Well, they're not necessarily a terrible team. It's just that they can't find the back of the net. It would be nice if maybe the TV pundits would look at it a bit more, I guess what I'm saying.
Mm.
Yeah, well, there are other sides to the game. This sort of standout thing is that QPR are bottom of the league, and so that kind of stands out to people as they must be doing terribly. But there are sides of their game that we think maybe our ratings are kind of highlighting that they are doing well, and there are just certain things that they need to get to click, and they will start becoming sort of moving up the table. They are doing well in certain regards, yeah.
Let's get stuck into this week's football then, and we'll start off, as always, with the TV games. And Saturday, 12:45 p.m, Manchester City at home against Tottenham. Manchester City 4-9, the draw 100-30, Tottenham in the betting at 13-2. Lee, Man City second in the league, 7 points from 14. Home record is strong, but they have gone a couple of games without a win at the Etihad, getting beaten by Stoke, first of all, then drawing with Chelsea. The last time they went 3 Premier League home games without a win was back in November 2010. So it's reasonable to expect them to bounce back early.
Yeah, it is. It is reasonable. They're obviously a very good side, boosted by the news that, get this, Yaya Toure turned up for training 24 hours early.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know quite how he did it, because he was playing for his nation on Wednesday night, and he turned up for training at 11 a.m. on Thursday. You can only think it's a private jet with the Man City logo emblazoned on the side of it. So that's great news for him, obviously. He passed kind of fitness test as well. So they're looking in decent shape, City, for this. Jovetic is fit again. Probably go 4-4-2 again with Aguero and Dzeko. Dzeko scored for Bosnia against Belgium when they drew 1-1. Aguero only played 60 minutes in the two matches that Argentina played. So they look in decent nick. Tottenham have got doubts over Lloris, Shadley, Adebayor and Bentaleb. So a few late fitness tests for Tottenham, and it's a pretty tricky one for them. Haven't always fared well coming back from Europe in midweek, and now they've had an international break to cope with. I'm not keen on the price for Manchester City. I know they will win this game. I'm very confident they will win this game, but 4-9, it just seems a little bit on the short side, given that Tottenham have got quality players in their ranks. I do think there'll be goals, though. You know, you look at the head-to-heads between these two. City beat Tottenham 11-1 on aggregate last season over the two games, if you were doing an aggregate score. And generally, there are lots of goals in their games. 3-1 to Tottenham the season before, 2-1 to City the season before that, 3-2 to City, 5-1 to Manchester City at White Hart Lane in August 2011. So, you know, ever since this City team has come together, there have been lots of goals. I'm going to look at Man City to win. And both teams are scoring this one, I think. I don't think they'll win 2-0. I think Tottenham have got a goal in them, even if it's from a set piece. Alistair might tell us a bit more about this, but the possession will be interesting as well. Tottenham pretty much let Arsenal have the ball at the Emirates. I think it was the lowest, I think I'm right in saying it was the lowest ever possession they'd had in a Premier League game. I think it was 31%, and that'll happen again here. So they'll be trusting their strikers to hit City on the break. And I wouldn't be surprised if they manage that. So I think both teams will score, just because there'll be a bit of fatigue all around. But I think Man City will win the game.
Man City to win and both teams to score in the betting at 2-1 here with Hills. Interesting that Lee mentioned Alistair Yaya Toure. He showed a little bit of his old sparkle against Aston Villa a couple of weekends ago, and possible absence of Fernandinho might not have a major impact with Fernando ready to step into that breach.
Yeah, for sure. I think City have got such great strength and depth that I can't really look past anything but a City win in this one. They trounced Tottenham twice last season, and Tottenham just capitulated against the top three teams time and again last season. The thing I think to look at is the Tottenham fans would have hoped that Pochettino coming in would have been able to sort of shore things up against the bigger sides, but it wasn't much different against Liverpool earlier in the season. And they conceded three. They actually conceded 25 goals in six games against the top three last season, and only conceded 26 goals, so only one more in their other 32 matches.
Wow.
Chris, last season. We do a little thing, an impromptu thing called Stat of the Week, Alistair. I think you might nail it. I think you might better at every single game. That's a great start.
Yeah, so the performance against Arsenal, like you say, might give them some hope sitting back, but it's one thing doing it against an Arsenal side that probably aren't playing at their full potential at the moment, and another thing doing it against the City side that seem like they could just hit top gear at any second. Like you say, Yaya Toure just showed a bit of spark last week, and if he finds form, then Tottenham could be in trouble.
Man City for the win then at 4-9, Lee?
Yeah, love that both teams to score, but I also like Lampard as well. He's just remarkably, he's just won the Player of the Month award for Manchester City in September, which says a lot about a club who spent £1 billion or whatever they spent trying to get this team. This man who is allowed to go on a free to the MLS has won their Player of the Month for September. He's also scored 8 goals against Spurs in his career, 17-10 to score in this one. It might be one that you'd play in play because he might not start, but if he comes off the bench, I wouldn't mind having a look at the next live goal scorer market when it's in play, because we know he'll keep going to the end. We know he's fresh, probably one of the freshest players without having to go on international duty. 17-10 pre-match, obviously it depends on whether he starts or not, but it might be an in-play bet for you.
Sunday 1:30 p.m. QPR take on Liverpool. QPR 4-1, the draw 16-5. Liverpool in the betting at 6-10. Two headline offers here: Charlie Austin to score and QPR to win is 10-1. Adam Lallana to score and Liverpool to win in the betting at 3-1. Alistair, things are looking pretty desperate for QPR. I know we mentioned them at the start of the podcast, but they've only picked up 4 points in the Premier League and they've only got 1 point since late August. However, things not exactly straightforward for Liverpool at the moment. The absence of Luis Suarez has probably been more difficult to overcome than even Brendan Rodgers envisioned, really. And there is the furore surrounding Raheem Sterling's comments that were broadcast via Roy Hodgson midweek. So things not going well for Liverpool either.
No, yeah, definitely. Both teams really, really need 3 points this weekend. Liverpool, like you say, struggling a bit, but should have Daniel Sturridge back, and that could be the difference. He was brilliant against Tottenham last time he played for Liverpool, and he could really change things. I don't see much in this Raheem Sterling business. I think it's as much people trying to sort of find something to talk about during the international break as he really is going to be too knackered to play. I think he'll be fine, and if he starts, Sturridge is back, and Balotelli, who surely will start scoring eventually. He's actually had the most shots without scoring in the whole of Europe this season. 23 shots, 0 goals, but eventually, surely he'll start finding the net.
QPR 4-1, the draw 16-5, Liverpool in the betting at 6-10. What did you make to Sterling's comments that were broadcast via Hodgson Lee?
Totally agree with Alistair. It's, you know, it's the media just looking for a story when it's gone quiet. You know, maybe he shouldn't have said it, but you know, he's only being honest, isn't he? You know, who cares? I'm more concerned about what Harry Redknapp said before the international break in regards to fitness. The fact that he didn't think his squad was fit enough. You wonder where the buck stops, don't you? When a manager says his squad isn't fit enough, but he's had 2 weeks to get them fitter and get them working really hard on the training ground, because only three players went away on international duty for QPR. Leroy Fair and the Chilean pairing of Maurizio Isla and Eduardo Vargas, who scored, by the way, Vargas. So in good nick for his country. And he's been getting better, actually. One of the positives from QPR is the reports about Vargas settling in quite nicely. The major problem for them, I think, is Joey Barton missing and Jordan Mutch as well. Without those two players, they haven't got the quality in midfield to hold off many teams. There's been a great quote from Redknapp. A reporter asked him in the pre-match press conference if the fact that they were the most disciplined team in the Premier League, if they could read anything into that, you know, should they be a bit nastier, I guess the journalist was asking. And Redknapp said, we're going to kick hell out of them on Sunday, jokingly, obviously. But I think there's a serious point behind that, in that they haven't been fit enough to get close enough to kick teams. You watched them against Tottenham, against Man U, they were so far off both of those teams, and lost heavily. Lost to West Ham 2-0, could have been more as well. The game against Southampton, could have been more in that game. So I think if they have improved their fitness, then they'll be closer to Liverpool. But I think what will happen is, I alluded to it earlier on when we were just chatting at the start about QPR. They've had 58 shots on goal at home. Now, I'm not saying every single shot's been on target or every single shot's been decent, but only 3 goals from 58 shots. It shows they're getting forward. It shows they're trying to attack, but they haven't got the quality to score.
Yep.
I think if they're fitter, that'll only improve. I don't think they'll sit back and try and hold Liverpool. Liverpool will give them possession. Liverpool will be happy to play counter-attack, especially with Sturridge and Balotelli up front. I think QPR might be the fitness might be the undoing of them this weekend, ironically, because I think they'll push forward too much and Liverpool will catch them on the break. Can see QPR scoring, but I think Liverpool will win. I really dislike the price about Liverpool just as a straight win, but again, Liverpool to win, both teams to score at 21-10, you know, that looks decent. I mean, I think that both teams to score is worth a look as well, to be honest.
13-20 both teams to score.
That's been cut drastically. It was 3-4.
It was 23-20.
That is too short. But I mean, you know, I think if QPR give Liverpool the amount of shots on goal that they tend to give teams, they average 11 shots conceded on goal. If they do that, then Liverpool will score a couple. I don't think QPR can outscore them. It's, you know, Balotelli 5-6, Sturridge 5-6. I know which one of those I'd rather have.
Yeah.
Despite that, you know, Alistair saying that he will score sooner or later, he has to at some point. But maybe Sterling 13-10, just to kind of shut everyone up as well. It might be worth a look. But yeah, Liverpool to win, both teams to score for me at 21-10.
At Liverpool 6-10 to win the game. The draw 16-5. QPR 4-1. Let's look at the 4 p.m. game on Sunday. This is Stoke versus Swansea. Stoke 29-20. The draw 9-4, Swansea in the betting at 19-10. The Britannia, Lee, might not be the fortress of old, but there still have only been 3 goals in 3 games there this season. And this game looks, to my eye, to set up pretty well for Stoke. Swansea, after that blistering start, they won the first 4. They've stumbled, losing 2 and drawing a couple. And Wilfred Boney returning from international duty with the Ivory Coast, whether he's included in the starting lineup or not, that could really affect the betting in this game, because he is their major impact player.
He is, but he's only scored that one Premier League goal, hasn't he? He went away and scored in the first of the 2 internationals that he played in for the Ivory Coast. Missed a penalty in that game as well. He didn't play when he returned from international duty in September. So I think he's only started 1 away game so far this season. So you'd have to check the team news on that. I said on our last podcast that when he scored, I'd want to be with him for a couple of weeks, because he's a bit of a clutch scorer. But you may have to wait until the next home game. I think they're home to Leicester next weekend. So maybe just bide your time and have a look if he's named in the team there. Stoke, funny one this for Stoke, because I think they've been better counter-attacking all season, and I think they'll be able to counter-attack here as well, strangely, at home. Last season in this fixture, the Swansea had 2/3 of the possession, and I think that'll happen again. I think Stoke will happily give up possession to Swansea, who like to knock it about, and I think they'll try and hit them on the break. Stoke are one of those teams, I think they're almost waiting to give someone a bit of a hiding. I'm not saying it's going to be Swansea, but again, the amount of shots they have, they're 5th best at shots on goal, but 15th best, or 15th in the table, at shots on target.
Okay.
Which says something about their ability in front of goal. Peter Crouch has got a lovely little record against Swansea for Stoke. They've scored 4 in 3 home games against Swansea for Stoke. Been talking about wanting a new contract this week. And I think he's a little bit overpriced at 17-10 to get a goal. So I'll play Peter Crouch to score in this one. I'm not sure about the outright. I think Stoke, I'd edge towards Stoke, but I'm not massively convinced.
Interesting that Lee mentions Peter Crouch as well at Alistair, because he maybe doesn't get the publicity of some of the other Premier League strikers, but he's scored more goals, 27, and provided more assists, 12, than any Stoke player in the Premier League since his debut for the club in 2011. He's not exactly prolific, but he has got a decent strike rate for Stoke.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a fan of Peter Crouch. I think when he was taken to Stoke, a lot of people thought it was Tony Pulis just trying to have a big man up front, but Mark Hughes has changed the way Stoke play. They're no longer punting it long. They do play the ball on the floor, like as you mentioned. They do play on the counter as well. They are good to watch sometimes even as well. I think Crouch has done well. As you say, he's got a great record against Swansea, so I think that would be a good bet to back him to score. The other thing I was going to say was, you alluded to QPR's shots and goals at home this season, but Stoke actually managed to have a worse record in that regard at home. They've had 51 shots this season and at home, and only scored 1 goal. So that's pretty poor. Only 3 goals, as you say, in 3 home games. I reckon this could be a low-scoring one. They could be without Victor Moses and Mame Biramjuf, and they're the 2 players that do carry them forward and carry their attacking threat this season. Sort of on the counter, they look the most dangerous players. So I don't see Stoke either scoring or conceding many in this one.
Under 2.5 goals, Alistair, is 4-6. Under 1.5 goals, 9-4. And if you fancy the 0-0 draw, not beyond the realms of possibility, 9-1 for under half a goal in the game. And you mentioned the potential absence of Mama Biram Diouf and Victor Moses just a moment ago. We've got a Potters fan out in the office, and he says that those 2 players are absolutely key for Stoke, and if they don't play, he thinks Swansea might go to the Britannia and get, well, at least pick up a point.
Right, yeah, well, that sounds about right. Maybe it's one that's worth waiting for the lineups for. As you say, Wilfred Boney as well, key.
Mm. Yeah, and without if those 2 aren't playing and Boney's not playing, you could really see low on the goals.
You could.
I mean, it looks a great shot. You know, I can completely see where you're coming from on that shot, unders on the goals.
West Brom at Manchester United is next. Monday night football, 8 p.m. kickoff. This one, and West Brom 17-5. to win the game. The draw is 14-5. Man United odds on at 3-4. Headline offers here: Saido Berahino is
hard to say.
It's hard to say, and 9-1 to score with West Brom to win. Radamel Falcao to score and Man United to win is in the betting at 2-1. West Brom 14th in the league, Ali, but come into this game with a bit of confidence. Wins against Tottenham and Burnley, followed by that narrow loss at Anfield. They've got Berahino, who scored 6 from 9 for West Brom this season, and 5 of those goals have come at home as well. So he'll be looking to get on the score sheet against a rocky Manchester United defence.
Yeah, for sure. And I'd back him too. I'm pretty sure he scored at Old Trafford last season as well.
Yeah, he got the winner, yeah.
That would certainly be a good shout. There are lots of goals in West Brom versus Man United games. 16 in the last 3.
There was that 5-5, wasn't it? Do you remember that 5-5?
Including that ridiculous 5-5, yeah.
Crazy.
Which, in fact, incidentally, was the only Premier League game at the Hawthorns that Man United haven't won.
Wow.
They've won each of their other 8 visits there.
Mm, yeah.
So, I mean, they're not the same team as they were, but they do have a very good record there. So there's that to consider, even though you could say West Brom do have a bit more confidence.
Have you seen much much improvement stats-wise in Manchester United, Alistair? Because I spoke to, we do a podcast with the Football Writers Association, and the guest was James Ducker from The Times, who covers Man United quite a lot. He's a Northern Football correspondent, and he was saying he has seen signs of improvement. I must admit, I haven't detected them. I know they've won back-to-back games, but they hung on against West Ham and Everton, and second half display wasn't great. Do the stats say anything about them improving defensively? Because they do give away a lot of shots on goal, don't they?
Oh yeah, I don't think they've improved defensively much at all. They've definitely improved going forwards. If you think back to that draw at Burnley and another one at Sunderland, they were really quite poor, didn't really create much at all. But since then they've been creating a lot more and getting a lot more goals. But I don't really see much improvement defensively. They're still there to be got at, and maybe another both teams to score. Probably the best thing to do with Man United at the moment is both teams to score better.
Yeah, both teams to score in this game. 4-6, yes, for both teams to score. And let's have a quick word about...
That's not a bad price,
I think a lot of people might be playing the 12-5 Manchester United to win the game and both teams to score. Let's have a quick word about Angel Di Maria as well, Alistair. I know he ranks highly in your player ratings on whoscored.com.
Yeah, he does. He's second best in the league. He just seems to be doing everything for United. He picks the ball up deep, he dribbles, he scores goals, he sets goals up. He also helps out without the ball as well, which is really important. They really needed one of those all-action midfielders, somebody who's going to work back as well. He's always going to be a good price for a man of the match bet or a goal scorer bet, for sure.
Yeah, he's 17-10 to score any time in this game, which looks decent. 7-1 to score first, 7-1 to score last. He seems even more crucially in the absence of Wayne Rooney. Wayne Rooney's out for this game, suspended. Adnan Januzaj, rumours are abound that he's going to step in and Juan Mata's going to be dropped and he's going to play at the tip of the diamond, as it were. It's an exciting side going forward, but they are still injury hit at the back.
Yeah, just reading this morning that Herrera's told Louis van Gaal that he will be ready to play on Monday night with a pain-killing injection, so that would be a massive boost to them, of course, if he can come back, because Antonio Valencia, the latest player to be added to the injury list, which I think, you know, levels things out a little bit. West Brom are interesting. Similar to QPR, Alan Irving wasn't as vocal about this, but they had some fitness concerns And in the last international break, he basically put them through the paces, and they spent a lot of time on the training pitch, a lot of fitness work done. And although they lost the next game against Everton when they came back from the international break, they went on that. That's when they went on that three-match unbeaten run. So obviously paid some sort of dividends. I wonder if he's done the same again now. I've had a look round, and I can't see that he's been particularly working them hard. But I like West Brom, and I'm still very dubious about this Man United defence. I think I haven't seen them put together a proper 90-minute performance where they've really made me think this is a team that I can back at odds on. West Brom 17-5 is a little short though for a team of their calibre. I think I'm just going to go with Berahino to score. 9-5, it's catching, isn't it? 9-5. Did you see that video this week, guys? When it was under 21 match, was it France Sweden? When the French took the lead, and the player went up and did it like a right in front of his opponent's face. Did this kind of salute, and then they scored a winner in stoppage time. The opposition, and they all came back up to him and did the same thing.
Really?
You would have been fully justified in doing that to me after I ridiculed your Berahino thing. 9-5 to score any time. This is a player who scored 9 goals in 13 for club and country. If that's he's got a better scoring rate than many strikers in the Premier League, who'll be a much shorter price than him. You've got Edin Dzeko, for instance, is 5-6 against Tottenham. Berahino is 9-5 against Man United's defence.
Yeah.
Full of confidence, scored for the England under-21s in the first of the two legs against Croatia. I'm not bothered what happens in the game. I just think that's a great price.
No, I agree.
If you can make an argument for West Brom winning, the 9-1 for him to score and West Brom to win, if they win, it's likely he'll score.
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly. That's the last of the TV games then. Let's have a look at the Saturday fixtures. 3 p.m. kickoff, and we'll start with Burnley-West Ham. Burnley 17-10, the draw 23-10. West Ham in the market at 8-5. Danny Ings to score and Burnley to win 4-1 is one of two headline offers. The other one, Enna Valencia to score and West Ham to win in the betting at 4-1. Lee Burnley absolutely desperate for a win. They're drawing too many matches in the Premier League, and that's often the road to ruin, isn't it? Not getting the wins. Burnley's 4 points all gained through draws so far. Obviously, it's a simplistic way of putting it, not getting the wins, but you need to turn some of those draws into 3 points, or you're going to go down in this league. And that's what will probably happen to Burnley at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think so. They just don't. Yeah, you just need goals, don't you? You need to score goals, or you're in desperate trouble. And they're very low in the shots on goal table. They're even lower on the shots on target table, second bottom of that. West Ham, I've been really impressed by them ever since that 2-2 draw at Hull. The style has changed. The fans love it, and it seems to have given the players a new lease of life. We like Diafra Sakho on the podcast, don't we? He scored for his last time in the Premier League at 11-5. He's another very backable price this week as well.
15-80 is to score.
Why? Any idea why?
It looks big.
It does look big. Great record. I mean, he's just very, very good. I mean, Tony Cotty was saying this week on, I can't remember which website I read it on, that he thinks that Sakho and Valencia are pretty much the best front two they've had since he played for them with Frank McAvenny, which is like, yeah, I was great. But anyway, Tony Cotty was great, let's not get it wrong. So it's high praise for them, and they both seem like they're really enjoying the football. Enna Valencia is the headline offer here. He's a little bit more erratic. He's your kind of blockbuster player who can score a goal from nothing and win you a game. I think Sacco's your more reliable one. So I think I'll stick with Sakho here. West Ham, 8-5 is not the greatest price in the world. They've been clipped in since early in the week when I first spotted them. I texted you saying I think West Ham are a great bet this week. You said you couldn't be backing them. I think I said 7-4 at the time, didn't I?
Yes.
Couldn't be backing them at the price, which is fair enough. I get what you're saying. It's West Ham still, even though it is Burnley. So I think I'll just go with Sakho again. Sakho just to score any time in the game. I don't know. I don't get why he's that price. We've talked about his record over and over again. Don't need to bore everyone with it again, but 4-4 from 10 shots.
15-8, Diafra Sakho to score any time on Saturday afternoon. It's fair to say, and we've mentioned it already, Alistair, that Burnley little bit toothless and West Ham quite the opposite at the moment, really. We've talked about their brand of football positively on the on the podcast in the past, and Stuart Downing as well. Not mentioned him yet. He's looking really good this season.
Stuart Downing's just been reinvented this season. It's really sort of quite nice to see, because he was brilliant back in his Middlesbrough and Villa days. Kind of went off the boil quite badly when he was at Liverpool, and he's just doing really well this season. He's scoring, he's creating, he's playing a similar role to Di Maria, obviously not as well, in a similar system at West Ham, and he does look really, really good. What I would say, though, is I agree that Sakho is your best bet. 4-4, like you say, I could only think the only reason I can think of that he would be such a long price is that surely he can't keep on scoring. It's 4-4 is, I think he's the first West Ham player to do that since the 80s. And I don't know if he'd made it 5-5. I don't know, he'd be the first player since God knows when. And
might be the first player ever. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, and maybe people don't expect him to do that. But yeah, no, definitely worth backing that.
Would you shade West Ham in this match again over Burnley then?
Yes. Alistair, yeah. I'd say Sakho to score and West Ham to win would be a great bet.
Superb. Diafa Sakho to score and West Ham to win the game. If you just fancy West Ham to win the match, 8-5 looks a bet. Draw 23-10. Burnley in the market at 17-10. Let's have a look at Arsenal versus Hull. Arsenal 2-5. The draw 15-4. Hull in the betting at 13-2. Alistair, Arsenal back in their comfort zone, so to speak. Another loss against one of the big teams in the league. It is a recurring theme under Arsene Wenger in recent history anyway. They just can't get the results against the big teams, and they are in effect a flat track bully.
Yeah, they never really looked like getting anything from that game, did they? It was quite sad to watch. They just I suppose at least when they got thrashed last season, they looked like they created quite a bit at Chelsea last season, even though they got thrashed. But this season they didn't have a single shot on target. It was the first time in 6 years or something that they've not had a shot on target in a Premier League game. And their injury problems look like they could cost them this weekend. Koscielny was ruled out yesterday. It doesn't look like Walcott or Gnabry or Arteta will in fact be back this weekend. Ozil's out, obviously. So they've got the bare minimum at the back and very little on the subs bench to change things if things are going wrong against the Hull side that aren't doing too badly themselves.
Absolutely. This is actually Arsenal's joint second worst start to a league season under Arsene Wenger. They've only got 10 points from 7 games, the same as back in 98-99. The worst, incidentally, 2011-2012, where they only had 7 points from their opening 7 games. But the Arsenal fans in the past have decried Arsene Wenger's movement in the transfer window. But this time, Lee, or the last couple of seasons, he's brought in Mesut Ozil, Alexis Sanchez, now signed Danny Welbeck. You can't really get after Wenger for his work in the transfer window, but they just don't produce against the big teams, and that's why they are not going to challenge for the title.
Yeah, and this injury problem as well. You know, there was a really good piece, I think it was in the Daily Mirror, I think it might have been John Cross in the Daily Mirror, actually, who was done some research on how many injuries Arsenal have had over the years under Wenger. And it does seem, I mean, I know I've said it on this podcast year after year after year, you know, more injuries for Arsenal. It always seems to be the case. Maybe coincidence, maybe not. You'd think he'd have sorted it out if it wasn't a coincidence by now. This week, I think the big they've still got quality players, though. You know, you're looking at maybe a predicted 11 of Szczesny, Mertesacker, Monreal, Gibbs, Bellerin, Flamini, Wilshere, Cazorla, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Welbeck and Sanchez. So still very, very good 11. Bellerin's the interesting one there, because I think he could get a bit of a torrid time at fullback. Hull like to counter-attack down that side, down the left-hand side. He hasn't played in the Premier League, so he'll need lots of help. from whoever plays in front of him. I think it's 14 injuries Arsenal have got. Hull have had 14 players away on international duty, which is quite a lot for Hull. Now, we're hearing that they haven't got any problems apart from Mohamed Diame, who the Senegalese player is being checked. So he's not injured, but they're just checking on him because he's had a long trip to and from Africa to play on this one. Sonny Oluko also was with Nigeria, but came back fairly early. So they're all pretty much fit and ready to go. They're a good side, aren't they? But you know, I just wonder if they will go for it here. If they went for it, I think they could get a result. I'm just not sure they'll be brave enough to go through. I think they might set up for the point and try and hit Arsenal on the break. And I think Arsenal might just do what you kind of alluded to at the start. They might just flat track bully them, if that's a verb. You know, and just win 1 or 2-0. I like Arsenal to win an under 2.5 goals. A 1 or 2-0 win, maybe, you know, scoring early on, and then just consolidating it in the second half. A pretty drab game that goes by without anyone really doing an awful lot, and Arsenal like scraping through.
Arsenal to win and under 2.5 goals, Lee's bet there. That's in the match times goals section. 11-4, Arsenal to win and under 2.5 goals in the game. Ali, just before we leave that game, would you side with Arsenal here, or do you think they look too short in the betting?
I think they do look too short in the betting, and they're there for the taking. Hull have produced some good results this season already, and some good performances. And if you've got Jelovic and Hernandez up against, it would probably be Isaac Hayden playing centre back ahead of Koscielny. They could hurt them. Another interesting stat is that we sort of always think of Arsenal as being susceptible from set pieces. Obviously, with no Koscielny, they've only really got, and no Giroud to come back for corners, and a very small midfield. They've only really got Mertesacker and maybe Kieran Gibbs and Danny Welbeck to challenge at corners. Hull have scored the most headed goals in the Premier League this season, and 4 of the 9 that Arsenal have conceded have been headed goals. So I would, if you're looking for an outside scorer, maybe back one of the Hull centre-backs who do get quite a few goals. James Chester likes a goal every so often. Someone like that to get a goal for the visitors.
What about, there was another one you could pick there. I mean, I don't know if he plays, of course, is Michael Dawson to score against Arsenal with a header. That'd be a nice little story, wouldn't it, on Match of the Day?
Yeah, of course. I thought about mentioning him.
11-1.
He never really scored.
No, he doesn't. No, I'm ignoring that fact.
Both 11-1, by the way. James Chester 11-1 to score any time as well.
Given Alice's confidence in Hull, or lack of confidence in Arsenal, I mean, even if you don't want to play Hull to win the game, Hull plus a goal, so you're getting Hull and the draw, is 19-10, just a shade under 2-1. It's a fairly big price, that, for two of the three outcomes.
Absolutely. Next up, it's Crystal Palace versus Chelsea. Crystal Palace 6-1. The draw 17-5. Chelsea in the betting at 4-9. Chelsea already established a 5-point lead in the league, and they look fantastic. They played with superb control against Arsenal. Eden Hazard has a tendency, Lee, to drift in and out of matches, but he made the difference. And Diego Costa once again showed us how clinical he was with his goal late on in that game to seal it for Chelsea. Since Jose Mourinho returned to the club as manager just before the start of the 2013-2014 season, Chelsea have kept more clean sheets than any other side in the Premier League, 21 in total. Very solid defensively, with John Terry and Gary Cahill forming that centre-back partnership. That axis is very strong. It's just tough to see anyone beating them at the moment, Lee.
Yeah, I agree. The problem for Crystal Palace as well is that Scott Dan's out injured, and he's a good player for them. Martin Kelly could have to be moved inside depending on how they go. They've got Hangeland, of course, at the back, and Delaney and Ward. But unless you've got your strongest defence out, I think you'd be worried about taking on Chelsea. I don't know. really need to go too much more. I think Palace will try and play a kind of a counter-attacking style at home and let Chelsea have the ball, but that's just too dangerous if you're not a top defensive side. I don't think they're organised enough, Crystal Palace, at home to be able to pull that off. I'd be looking at Chelsea on the handicaps here. Chelsea, I mean, they don't go mad ever, Chelsea, either, but Chelsea minus one, so a two-goal clear victory is 23-20. Palace, I'd probably prefer to play Palace on the road if I was ever going to play them. I mean, I know a bit of Leicester last time out, but they've conceded three against West Ham in the league already this season, three against Newcastle in the Cup. They had the 0-0 draw with Burnley. Yeah, Chelsea will do this. I think they'll get this job done. It won't be spectacular, but just get the job done.
Chelsea minus one for Lee at 23-20. Alistair, there's been a tendency for Crystal Palace to play quite direct football this season. They'll probably set up like the away team here.
Yeah, for sure. I think, like you said, they're going to sit back, and I don't see them either. I don't see them holding out against a team like Chelsea. That Diego Costa Fabregas partnership will probably come good again. Costa's only got one goal less than Palace overall in total, and Fabregas only has one assist less than all of Palace's players put together. I think those two will manage to break them down. Something else interesting, I think, which would go along with this, is that over half of Chelsea's goals have been scored in the last 30 minutes of games, and nearly 60% of the goals Palace have conceded have come in the last 30 minutes. So maybe they'll be able to hold out for a chunk of the game, and then when Chelsea really, really go for it, Palace start to tire, Mourinho makes some changes, they'll get a goal.
Yeah, you're looking at Chelsea to score in the last 15 minutes. 76 minutes to full-time, yes, is 11-8, which looks decent. Chelsea to score a goal in the 61st to 75th minute, 21-10, yes. So look at a late goal for Chelsea in the game. Both Lee and Alistair going with Chelsea to win that game. Next up, it's Southampton versus Sunderland. 3 p.m. kickoff on Saturday. Southampton 11-20. The draw 3-1. Sunderland in the betting at 5-1. Two headline offers here. Graziano Pella to score and Southampton to win is 2-1. Stephen Fletcher to score and Sunderland to win in the betting at 8-1. Alistair, Southampton looking to get back on track after their 1-0 loss at Spurs. And Sunderland looking to maintain a bit of momentum after their 3-1 win against Stoke at home. Southampton, though, strong favourites for this match at 11-20.
Yeah, and rightly so. It's a long way for Sunderland to travel. They've yet to win away this season. Southampton yet to lose at home. I don't really see anything other than a Southampton win, even though, as you say, Sunderland did win, beat Stoke last week. Before the international break. Southampton have the best defensive record in the whole Premier League with only 5 goals conceded in 7 games. So I think for this game I'd be looking at Southampton to win 2-0. Sunderland did get 3 last time out, but they have, for the most part this season, looked pretty toothless going forward. And I could see Southampton, Ronald Koeman's got them really organised, and I could see Southampton holding out.
Southampton to win 2-0, 11-8. Just to extend on that statistic that you mentioned, Alistair, those 5 goals, no side in the top 4 tiers of English football have conceded as few goals as Southampton
wow,
this season.
There you go.
At 5. So Southampton looking staunch defensively, Lee. Mm. I just wonder about that price, 11-20.
Sure, isn't it? The bookies have always got them short, haven't they?
Southampton to win 2-0, 11-8, though.
Yeah, decent. That's all right, isn't it? And the only doubt, I think the only worry about this game is that Ronald Koeman's just picked up the Manager of the Month award. that old chestnut.
That curse.
I'm not sure if that really works. Yeah, Gus Poyet was absolutely delighted with that win, wasn't he? Because I think he was worried going into the international break. I think that was their first win in the Premier League, wasn't it? We talked a lot about another goal scorer on this podcast over the last few weeks, and that's Pella. Scored for Italy in the international break. But by the way, Italy in the international break, they beat Azerbaijan 2-1 Chiellini scored all three, by the way. The man who had his shoulder bitten, of course, by Luis Suarez. And Pelé scored the only goal in a 1-0 win at Malta. They're hardly tearing it up, Italy, are they?
No.
But yeah, great news for Pelé that he scored in that game. And he comes back to Southampton looking to add to his tally already. Think he could do as well. I mean, he's 10 to 11 anytime. Again, comparing Pelé to someone like, Sacco. You know, I don't get that. Or Berahino even. You know, why is he odds on? That's the kind of price I expected them to be.
Because they're so short in the betting, aren't they,
yeah,
Southampton?
Exactly.
That's the reason.
Yeah, exactly. But there's no reason why. It's just a patch of grass, isn't it? Doesn't matter. They don't have to win the game. I think the goal scoring prices are linked to the match price. I don't think it always works like that, personally.
Okay.
Southampton to win and Graziano Pelle to score is 2-1. Another way to play it. It's just a bit short for me. I think it'll be a controlled performance from Southampton, and I think they'll just they'll get the job. A little bit like the Arsenal Hull game for me. This I don't think Sunderland have got too much, so I'd be looking at unders on the goals here. Under 1.5 is 5-2. Under 2.5, 4-5. I'll put them together and go Sunderland to win. And under 2.5 goals, which is priced up at 23-10.
Southampton to win.
Yeah. Did I say Sunderland?
Yeah, you did.
Sorry, yeah. Southampton to win and under 2. Always good if you get the bet right at the end.
Southampton to win and under 2.5 goals then, Lee, 23-10. If you're looking for one positive for Sunderland in this game, Southampton haven't beaten them since 2003, a run stretching back 8 matches. So if you are a fan of head-to-heads, which some people are, some people aren't, they've not won against Sunderland since 2003.
And double that up with the Koeman thing. I mean, that could be the end of it.
Precisely. Penultimate match this weekend, Everton versus Aston Villa. Everton 6-10. The draw 3-1. Aston Villa in the betting at 9-2. Everton 17th in the league. Aston Villa are in 10th. Even though Everton had that chance to pinch a point at Old Trafford a couple of weeks ago, defensive deficiencies holding them back this season so far. Villa have had a difficult schedule recently, Lee, and they've paid the price. They've lost their last 3-0, Arsenal, Chelsea and Manchester City. It's possible they might see this as a little bit of respite here, Aston Villa. Seems strange to say that going to a place like Goodison, but they've had such a tough run in the league at this time of the season.
Yeah, they have. And look, I never quite believed it when I was watching it. We might hear more. Alistair will probably tell us more about the shot. I mean, they're bottom of the table in all sorts of shots tables at the moment. You just wonder if Everton will have too much for them. I don't think it'll be an easy day because we know Aston Villa are much better on the road and they can hit teams on the break. John Stone's out now after undergoing the ankle surgery. Distan and Alcaraz will be vying for the centre back spot alongside Jagielka. No Morales for Everton. It'd be interesting to see if Benteke plays in this one. I mean, he's ready. We're told he's ready. Just don't know whether they'll risk him just yet or let him have another couple of weeks out. If he plays, then I think it'd be nice. It might be Everton to win and both teams to score might be worth a look. I haven't got any really strong feelings on the game, if I'm being honest. I think Everton will get it done because I just don't rate Villa's ability to score, and we know that Everton have got goals in them. So I'll shade an Everton win, but I think Everton. I'd have to put both teams to score in there with Everton to win and both teams to score at 23-10. I can see a 2-1 or even a 3-1. Villa getting a goal, but not able to add to it.
Alistair, your thoughts on this one?
I don't know if I agree, to be honest. I think this is a good chance for Villa to get something from this game. They tend to do well on Merseyside. They've won at Liverpool earlier this season. They won at Liverpool last season. They've drawn, I think, 4 of their last 5 at Goodison Park. All of those score draws. And they do have Benteke back this weekend, who has 5 in 4 on Merseyside. So maybe he likes it up there. I don't know what the explanation is for that, but I can see Villa getting in with a chance in this one. You mentioned there you don't think they score many, or that they don't rate their ability to score very highly. I think you can. They've only got 2 goals away from home this season, but they have been, what you can say is they've been clinical They've scored two goals from just three shots on target.
Yeah, that's true.
Away from home this season. So Everton, who've got the worst defensive record in the league, the worst home record in the league, maybe if Villa, this so-called clinical Villa with Christian Benteke back as well, could get something.
2-1 Christian Benteke to score a goal at any time, which if he's bang on form, that's a good bet. And Everton to win the game short, 6-10. The draw, 3-1 Aston Villa, 9-2. Let's finish off with Newcastle versus Leicester. Newcastle 6-5, the draw 12-5. Leicester in the betting at 11-5. Big point for Newcastle against Swansea. Papi Cisse chipping in with a couple of goals. But still, Alistair, the pressure on Alan Pardew. Only 4 points from seven goals. It doesn't look like Mike Ashley's going to get rid of him at any time soon, though.
Yeah, you say that, but if they don't win this one, will he stick with him? I think, sort of stats aside, Newcastle will just purely be desperate to get a result in this game. And I think they should do. I don't see Mike Ashley sticking by him for much longer if they fail to beat Leicester at home. Leicester aren't a bad side, but looking at it on paper, you'd really, really, as a Newcastle fan, you'd really be expecting and hoping that your team could win that one and start to build up some sort of momentum.
We'll come to the Naps in a second, Lee. I don't want to talk about Leicester City after that draw against Burnley, scuppered the treble. There's been a bit of a letdown for Leicester City ever since that win against Manchester United. Pretty much as expected, that was such a huge win. There's been a little bit of a mental letdown subsequently, I think.
Yeah, there hasn't. It's funny, isn't it? I suppose one of the hard things in the Premier League is there's no easy week, is there? We know that. And they did so well against Man United. It's almost, I don't know if this is the case, but you know, maybe the players just believed their own hype a little bit after that, and then couldn't quite get up to the same level for the two teams they've played since then. And the 2-2 draw was pretty poor, really, I think, against Burnley. And before that, they lost 2-0 at Palace, who, you know, of course, aren't the best team in the world. So they just need to get back to basics a little bit. And I think that, look, I really rate Nigel Pearson as a manager. And I think having had 2 weeks with his team back on the training pitch, a bit of a time to stop and take stock of where they are, I think we'll get a better performance from Leicester here again. And I think going to Newcastle, although they aren't a great team at the moment, the atmosphere and the way Newcastle approach this, which I think they will go for the win here, being at home, I think that'll play into Leicester's hands. So I like Leicester. I like Leicester in the game. 11-5 is not really big enough for me, unfortunately. But I'll go back to our man Leonardo Ochoa, 6-4 to score any time. I'm going to stick him in with Leicester to win at 4-1. I think they'll upset Newcastle here. I think if they get an early goal from Ochoa as well, the Newcastle home fans will start all going again.
That's one of two headline offers here: Leonardo Ochoa to score and Leicester to win 4-1. The other one: Papi Cisse to score and Newcastle to win 3-1. Alistair, are you going with Newcastle here then to win the game?
Yeah, I am, and I like the sound of Papi Cisse maybe starting to find some form again and scoring quite regularly. So yeah, I like the sound of that.
Papi Cisse to score and Newcastle to win 3-1. Incidentally, Newcastle United, the only side yet to score first in a Premier League game this season. So if you fancy that to change, 8-11 Newcastle first goal. If you fancy it to continue, Leicester 6-5 to get the first goal on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, Cisse and neither Cisse or Ochoa have been away on international duty as well. So I think it's worth looking at. I think in general, look who's been away. If they've scored when they've been away and had a really good game, then great. If they've been away and had a bit of a torrid time, then it's probably worth swerving them this weekend.
Let's finish with the Naps. We've got to finish with the Naps, Alistair, unfortunately. I don't like talking through the Naps, in all honesty, because I'm on a dismal run and Lee's doing well at the moment.
So I haven't done the table yet, you know. I need to do the table.
You need to do the table at some point. Not until we start churning out a few winners.
10 games in?
Yeah, 10 games in. 10 games, that seems fair. But Lee, you're coming off the back of back-to-back winning Naps.
Yeah, 11-5 Sacco last time, wasn't it? I'm going to go with him again, actually. I really fancy West Ham, but on the prices, I like Sacco. I think they'll get lots of chances against Burnley, West Ham. I think they'll play positively. I think they'll really go for it. As I said before in the preview of the match, you know, Burnley do give away a lot of opportunities on goal. They're just not quite up to it for me. So I'm going to side with him to score again. It was either him or Berahino, and I'll go with Sacco because he's kind of proven to me so far this season. He's already got me a winner.
The F for Sacco, 15-8 to score any time for Lee. I'm going to go with Alistair. I'm going with Everton Villa to be a draw at 3-1. I like that price a lot. I don't rate Everton this season. I think they've regressed. It's just changed actually to 13-5 now, which is a bit cheeky.
Yeah, must
cheeky
have,
of the compounds.
They can't hear this, can they?
They can't hear this, I don't think. It's just gone 13-5 right now. I'll still stick with it. Obviously, I preferred the 3-1. But the 7 of the last 11 meetings between the two have been draws. I don't rate Everton at the back. I think they've regressed under Roberto Martinez. Defensively, definitely. So I'll take the draw 13-5 in the game between Everton and Aston Villa. Alistair, what's your best bet?
Well, he's stolen that one.
he does this every week, Alistair. it's me.
That is my modus operandi on this podcast.
You should go last. We do all the work here. You should go last.
I would have said, yeah, Villa to get a draw. I would say score draw at Goodison Park. I also like the look of City. I can't remember the exact odds, but City to win by at least a couple of goals against Spurs, and I'll change completely from the Villa one, and I will go with James Chester to score any time at the Emirates.
Wow!
And if it's a header, then you can.
we'll try and ask the
should get paid out double.
We'll ask the compilers for a price. To be fair, sometimes they have put that special up as a goal to be scored with a header.
Yes.
So we'll try and find out, Alistair. I'll tweet you if they give us a price on that. They'll probably shy off it. But if that lands 11-1, then we're closing the naps.
Yeah, you'll be invited back, Alistair, if that one comes in. By the way, that treble, Diafra Sakho to score any time 15-8, draw in the Everton Aston Villa game, they've clipped it in just as I was speaking, 13-5 now. James Chester to score any time 11-1, 123.2-1.
It's got to be worth 50p, I suppose.
Has to be.
Would you stretch to a quid?
Alistair, thank you for your company. You can follow Alistair on Twitter at Ali Tweedale. Alistair, the editor-in-chief at whoscored.com. Fantastic website, Alistair. Keep up the good work.
Great. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you, Alistair. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers.
Cheers, mate.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mr. Phelps.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Thank you, folks, for listening to the podcast. We will have a naps table.
Yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it this week. It's my number one job this week.
Some point in the future.
Yeah, no, it'll be done for this time next week.
Thank you for listening to the podcast once again. And remember, you can follow us on Audio Boom. Just search the William Hill page and this podcast available on iTunes as well. Thank you once again to Alistair for joining us. Mr. Phelps.
Can I just say one thing?
Go on.
If anyone's made it to this stage of the podcast, which I hope they all have, DK also hosts the golf podcast. And this week, we're talking naps, 125-1 winner on the golf podcast. Just gone.
Well, I wasn't going to mention it because I'm happy with everyone in this office knowing how egotistical I am. But I don't want that to be broadcast in public.
100.
I was happy about that.
You can quit. Yeah. It's worth following the golf podcast.
It would
podcast.
Probably be best if I did, to be honest.
Yeah, quit while you're ahead.
125-1 winner. Thank you once again to Alistair. Thank you, Lee, for your company. And we'll be back next week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.